Good evening. We are so fortunate this evening to have as our speaker one of this church's most solid rocks upon which we are built. Or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's Plymouth Rock.
We all know that some of us contribute in one way and some of us contribute in two ways, and Barbara contributes in every way. Not only is she a healer, a lead healer, a message bearer, a member of the choir, sometime director of the choir, she's also one of the better speakers that we have around. Not to mention a student of divinity at some university in Ohio, which calls her away on occasion, but we're lucky to have her with us here tonight. Please help me welcome our Barbara Christensen.
I'm thankful for this one right here.
Aren't we all?
Yes, yes indeed. You know, normally when we do messages at the end, the message bearers will say, giving all glory and honor to God, the angel kingdom. And I'm saying that right now because the angels and God are going to be speaking through me tonight. It doesn't mean I'm going to go into a trance. But as most of you know, and as Lindy alluded, I started seminary a few months ago, and with the goal eventually of becoming a hospice chaplain. So that would seem to indicate that I have a calling to be around people who are dying, and I guess I do. But the problem with people who are dying is that they die. And that part can be really sad, you know? And in the last almost 3 months, as I've been going through the first stage of my education for all of this, I've many times said, why am I doing this? Why am I having to learn the Old Testament from Genesis up to right now I'm doing Deuteronomy, and do unto others, but don't do unto Deuteronomy. But anyway, it's amazing what I'm learning. I have an Old Testament class. I have an ethics class, and right now I'm 3 days behind on my ethics of war paper. I should be home writing tonight. I also have a Foundations of Church Renewal class, which is asking me and the other students to do all these readings and then write papers about how we believe church leaders can make our churches relevant in the 21st century. You know, in a world of internet and other ways that people find gratification, how do we convince people that it's worth coming here, whether it's a Sunday or a Wednesday night? How do we make this relevant? I do have one more class. I'm like, what is it? It's actually the one that's most pertinent to what I think I'm going to be doing 3 years from now. It's a pastoral care and counseling class. And on that class, I have to write lots of papers about the kinds of problems that my spiritual family might bring to me and how would I respond. And I appreciate those of you who have come to me recently with some of your questions, because it's forcing me to try and come up with some answers for you. And then I have to share my answers with my peer group, and 20 other pastors are weighing in, and some of them don't agree with me. Imagine that. But you probably thought you were coming for a traditional Thanksgiving talk. And I've actually heard two wonderful Thanksgiving talks here in the last week. Millie gave one last Wednesday, and Reverend Connie gave one Sunday morning. And I'm sorry if you missed them, but I'm not going to talk about Thanksgiving in the traditional way. So, sorry. But what I am going to talk about is death and dying and being thankful. And I'm not sure if it was Millie or Reverend Connie who alluded to this in the last week, but one of them said a lot of people do make their transition, leave the body this time of year. And we might go to a statistician and he or she might say, well, no, that's not true. It really, if you look at when people die or are born, it really pretty evenly spaces out throughout the year. But For those of us who lose people around holiday time, boy, those are the deaths we really remember. And I stand before you tonight telling you that the men in my life like to check out during Thanksgiving week. On Monday, it was the five-year anniversary of the man I almost married but dearly loved. He died 5 years ago. Today is the 13-year anniversary of my brother Bob, who died of brain cancer. And Friday is the four-year anniversary of my father, who died of Alzheimer's. So this week, 2 days apart, I have three significant men in my life. Now, the great thing is, today, I'm not really sad about those losses. Time does heal, you know, but there are different things that trigger when we have a loss. And most everybody in this room knows that we had a very surprising, painful loss that took our breath away when we found out about it this weekend, of Katie, who spoke here just about 3 weeks ago on Wednesday night. I don't know, for those of you who might have been here but didn't hear or didn't know her well personally, she's a beautiful woman, dark hair, and wonderful smile. The thing about Katie was always her smile, and she spoke about 3 weeks ago on Wednesday night. She was, they believe she died of a brain aneurysm and was found in her bed on Friday with a book on her chest. And like Jim, I really wonder what the book was that she was reading as she made that. And we, I may never know. That's just me being curious. But what I do know is that for those of us who knew her, we feel shock and we feel ripped off. And we want to shake our fist and say, God, why? 43 years old, mother of a precious 10-year-old daughter. A young woman who was a psychologist who was in a really great part of her life. At least one or two of you talked with her within that last 24 hours of her life. She had no inkling of what was to come in that quick moment. And in this thought pattern, we believe that the soul chooses the parents and the situation they will be born into. And I also believe, from having it proven to me in different ways, that we come for a certain set of lessons. And for me, how I like to picture it is that we arrive as these baby souls, but we've, on the soul level, we've planned a blueprint for our life. But just as you might have a blueprint for a house. Once you start building a house, you might look out and say, well, you know what? The window would really look better over here than over there looking at the neighbor's garbage can. So let's move the window, you know? And so to me, that's where the free will enters. We come in with a plan for our lives, but then the free will has influence and the blueprint gets altered. I don't know if we know the hour of the day when our blueprint says, okay, this is when we're going to leave the body. I don't know that on the soul level we get that kind of information. In the Bible, in the four Gospels, there's a couple references to Jesus Christ talking about the returning of Christ, and he says, no one knows the hour or the day, not even the angels in heaven or the Son himself. So Christ is saying, I don't know when I'm coming back. Only the Father knows. And many people have taken these verses to mean that, you know, we don't know the hour or the day that we're going to leave the body. And I ask you, what if God were to suddenly just show up for this gathering and said, you know what? All of you get in a line and come up one at a time, and I'm going to tell you what day you're going to check out. Would that be a blessing or a curse? I think if you really thought about it, having that knowledge would be a curse. For me, anyway. I know maybe some of you want to know. Would Katie have lived her life any differently if she had known that it was going to end last Thursday night? Maybe not. people who get a diagnosis of cancer or AIDS or Alzheimer's, how do they change their lives? Are they better off having this knowledge? Yes, for some people, perhaps yes, for others, no. But we, fortunately, I believe, we don't get to know definitively when we're going to leave unless we make an active choice to kill ourselves. Then we can pretty much narrow it down. One of the things about Katie is that she really was so good at encouraging everybody she met. This past summer, when I lost half of my job and was toying around with the idea of going back to school, she was very encouraging to me and told me I could do it at this advanced age and these old brain cells. And she, I'm sure many of you will nod and say she was encouraging to you as well. And as outsiders, we can say, God, this isn't fair. Why can't she be there for her daughter? Those of us who, as adults, got to have her encouragement, why can't her daughter get a lifetime of this from her mom? And I don't have those answers. Maybe after 3 years in seminary, I'll have found the perfect verses or the perfect insight, but I doubt it. I doubt as my years in hospice ministry that I hope to achieve, I doubt that I'll always have the answers for the families who are going to ask me why. There aren't simple answers. But I know as I reflect on my brother's journey of 10 years with brain cancer, or my mother who died at Christmas time from a brain aneurysm similar to Katie's, or my father with his diagnosis of Alzheimer's and slipping into this world that is unfathomable, I know that it isn't the end for them. And that's what I love, and that's what I'm so thankful to spiritualism for, is that we come to this place where we get it proven to us that there is not an end of life once the body dies. We get to know that they still love us, they're still connected to us, they still want to communicate with us, they still share our joys and sorrows. They are still with us. That doesn't mean that today, as we remember Katie, we're going to feel satisfied by just her spiritual presence. We still want to look her in the eye. We still want to be able to hug her. We still want her in the front row or the back row or next to Jane with her arm around Jane. We still want her at the Christmas party in 2 weeks. And I'm sure she will be there, but it'll be in a different way. And when it's this close to the hurt, it's not quite satisfactory to us at the human level. But I do know that as the messages come through and as we feel her presence, just as I feel the presence of my mother and my father and my brother and Woody, the man I loved, I know we will feel Katie, and she will communicate, and she will communicate with her daughter, and she will live on in her daughter. I look at my niece and nephew, my brother who died, his children, and they're the spitting image of my brother. So that means they look a lot like me. Poor things. But anyway, only they're taller and willowy and not short and stumpy. But what's really interesting to me is how my nephew has gotten my brother's personality. My nephew was 7 when Bob died, and yet Todd has the same kind of personality, the same sense of humor, and the same laugh. And when you walk into a room, you do this double take, because I think my brother is there, and he is. And so I don't have easy answers tonight, and maybe you didn't know Katie, but you might have known somebody else recently, or you might have heard of these young men who were drag racing in Coronado yesterday, and you might shake your head and say, why? At 17, why were these young people foolish and risk everything, and one of them had to die. Why? Did they have an agreement with God that they were going to just have 17 years of life and that was it? Hardly seems like the right plan. But we don't know. We don't know the bigger picture. And therein lies the mystery. I think therein lies some of the fascination I have for this process of death and this mystery of what's on the other side. It's a journey that so far we can't buy a ticket that will take us there and back to where we are right now so that we can tell each other. We can go to Italy, and now we can even, with enough money, take a space flight and come back and tell our peers. But to be able to do it in the same tangible way, to go to the other side and come back, we're limited. They're limited. Katie is limited in how much she can communicate with us. But what Millie would say, and what I'm here to echo, is that Katie took love with her, and it's her love that we are going to feel back. And if we can know anything about the other side, is that it's filled with love. As I ponder writing a paper on the ethics of war, I say, you know, where is the love? Where is this need for overpowering someone else coming from versus the need of just caring for one another, that those of us who come to this community exhibit, not only here, but as we go throughout our lives? I talked with one woman in this room tonight who found us recently, and I so appreciated that she said she could feel the love when she discovered this spiritual family. And as I write these papers online with my other classmates, I try and for this church renewal class, you know, they're saying, oh, the turnout at my church is so small, and how do you measure success, and how do you get more numbers into your pews, and how do you get more people to put money in the basket, all these things. And I write back and I say, you know what? I don't look at success that way. I look at success if somebody new comes through the door and I see one of the regulars go introduce themselves to that person and try and make them feel welcome. That is huge, that we can find a way to reach out to one another and let each other know that none of us walk alone in this world, that we're all connected, whether in the body or free. We are being successful children of God, imaging as Christ walked, welcoming everyone. Doesn't matter if they have money in their wallet. Doesn't matter if they have new shoes. Doesn't matter if they have a 20-pound turkey. Doesn't matter if I haven't had sleep for 3 days because I'm writing papers till 3. Sorry. We ran out of Kleenex. We usually have a box up here. I'm sorry. I'm trying to ask myself. I have daughters who are 7, and the littlest one just turned 7. The oldest one is almost 9. And when I cry like this, sometimes I try and say they're happy tears. They bought that when they were little, but now they just look at me like, what are these tears? But you know what? Thank you.
That's a big one.
Okay. And these are happy tears because I realized as I was reflecting here, it's where the emotion came in, was where I was talking about how proud I am all of you who reach out to each other. So whether it's on Facebook, late night emails, phone calls, giving each other rides, making the coffee so somebody else doesn't have to, getting here early, picking up the songbooks, all of you play an important part in our spiritual family. And that makes me so incredibly proud. We don't have the biggest church in town, but we may have enough love to rival the Rock Church over in Point Loma with 4,000 people on a Sunday morning. Our love volume may be as big as theirs, but it's not a competition. It's about finding this place where we find that we can connect with God. And I'm so thankful on this Thanksgiving Eve that I have found this place where I can worship freely, where I can express the truth that has been proven to me through God and the angels. I am thankful that they give me the courage in these online classrooms and when I go to Ohio to kind of say, I'm the spiritualist in the group. I'm a little bit over here compared to the rest of you, but, you know, hear me out. Because some days I'm not that courageous as I'm writing at 2 in the morning, but I try to be. So the last thing I want to say is to just share one other little thing in my life, which is my girls, their dog died last week. And Nigel was 90 in human years, so he had a good life. May we all reach 90. But he got really sick a week ago Sunday, which was Ava's birthday. She turned 7. And Sophia, who's 8, flipped out. She's like, Nigel cannot die on Ava's birthday. And I've heard myself saying, don't worry, honey, he won't. And then I'm like, don't you dare go on Ava's birthday. No. Well, Nigel died the next morning. But thank you, Nigel. And all of us in the family were doing pretty well with this, except yesterday when I came home from work, Ava was sitting on the front stoop, and she had this one of those little milk bone dog biscuits. The UPS delivery person, every time she would drop off a package, always would leave a little dog biscuit for Nigel. So Ava and Sophia had come home from the park with our nanny, and there was a package and a dog biscuit. And this little Ava lost it. And all I could do was hold her, and we looked at this dog biscuit. So we decided to take it to a neighbor's house. The neighbor has a dog, and so we knocked on Francine's door, and I said, go ahead, Ava. And so Ava started to tell about Nigel dying and being old and 90. And in the background, Francine's dog, Pearl, is barking and probably smells the dog biscuit that we're here to deliver. So we tell Francine the story. Well, Ava does. And it was in Ava's telling that I started to cry for Nigel. Nigel had been gone for 10 days. And it hadn't affected me until I watched that dog biscuit go out of her hand. And so the point is that we don't know what's going to trigger the tears. We don't know when the real moments of sadness are going to come after a loss. But I think we have to honor them. And so afterwards, Ava and I went back to the house, and she just wanted hugs, and I said, well, what are the happy times you remember about Nigel? And she said, I liked when we took him to the ocean and I would go swimming with him. And I said, do you want to draw a picture of that? And she said, sure. So she sat down and across the table from me, and I just watched her coloring and said nothing. I didn't need to, but pretty soon there was this big wave and her and Nigel in the water and fish, and she put those little birds that children and even us as adults still put in the sky, those little M kind of things. And then there was the sun in the corner with the smile on the sun and the rays coming out. But then what I thought was really most fascinating about her drawing, and I'll close, is that she put in a palm tree that was supposed to be, and then in the palm tree she put a house at the top of the palm tree. I said, well, what's that? And she said, well, it's a tree house. And it's got 5 bedrooms in it and a bunch of bathrooms. And she said, and it's so that all of us, it can be in the tree house and be closer to Nigel in heaven. And we agreed that she would save this picture forever. And the tears dried up, and, you know, for today it was, or yesterday it was enough. So, Katie somewhere is probably coming up with a blueprint for the perfect treehouse, whatever her treehouse looks like, whatever her next life looks like, whatever her lessons look like on the other side. And in the meantime, we can paint pictures in our minds and in our hearts of our memories of her, as we can do for all those we've lost. And some days the tears will flow, and some days we'll laugh. But we'll always have her. We'll always have them. Thank you. Yeah. Also, I did a Millie thing. When life gives you chocolate, pass it on. So pass this around. Take as many pieces of chocolate as you think you might need and pass it on. But don't leave the wrappers on the floor, or Reverend Jeff will excommunicate me.